This meeting of the House Judiciary Committee will now come to order. The time is now 1:02 p.m. on Wednesday, January 28th, 2026. We are meeting in the Grunberg Room, Capitol Room 120. The following members are present: Representative Eichheit, Representative Costello, Representative Mina, and myself, and also Representative Underwood, and myself, Representative Gray, Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. I would like to recognize the staff supporting this meeting. We have Sophia Tenney from House Records, Andrew Giamolti, House Records and Training, Kyla Tupo from the Juno LIO, and Dylan Hitchcock-Lopez, my committee aide. We have two items of business on today's agenda: House Bill 24, Aggravating Factors at Sentencing, and House Bill 20, Prohibit Fees for Paper Documents. As our first item of business, we will take up House Bill 24, Aggravating Factors at Sentencing, for its second hearing in our committee. This bill was introduced last session, so therefore we would like Representative Josephson to provide a brief refresher on HB 24 before we open public testimony. So at this time, I would like to invite Representative Josephson and his staff, Ken Alper, to the witness table. Please put yourself on the record and begin your refresher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I'm Andy Josephson. I represent House District 13 at South Midtown Anchorage. On the 15th of May, we were last here on this bill, and you heard at that time from myself, and you also heard from a woman named Tammy Willis, who was the victim of a violent assault that was sort of, it's undisputed, was connected to her sexual orientation. You also heard from a former U.S. prosecutor for the state named Karen Loeffler, and Karen Loeffler talked about the importance of this bill as well. The bill, first of all, the catalyst for the bill were events that occurred just before New Year's, just before Christmas in 2019. Ms. Willis was a three-time victim. The third time was the worst, where she was feloniously assaulted. I say that because when you're cut open and you need suturing, that's absolutely felony conduct. It's probably a B felony in that range with a dangerous instrument, et cetera. There was a real response, a positive response from the Kenai-Soldotna community. Both city councils offered resolutions in support, including our own Justin Ruffridge, who served on the city council at the time, I think, of Kenai-Soldotna. Also, the borough assembly supported taking action. My partner in that effort was Gary Knopp, who was a member of this body for about 4 years and tragically died in a plane crash in around 2020, I think. The bill has been heard in the legislature on three different legislatures spanning nine hearings. So I believe Ms. Willis has offered testimony five times as to what happened to her. What the bill does is it adds four words to a section C-22 of 1255-155. That's where the aggravators and mitigators are. So when there's a presumptive sentence of X, say 2 years, for example, and I'd have to check whether it applies to a first felony offense, but certainly a second felony offense, then the prosecutor can put on evidence before a jury that that an aggravator applies. And if the jury finds that aggravator, the judge can then choose at his or her discretion to enhance the sentence based on the finding of that aggravator. The four words are sexual orientation and gender identity. They would be added to the list already in the bill, or rather in the law at section 22, as I noted. And that includes color, creed, physical or mental disability, ancestry or national origin, as well as race and sex. And, you know, the statistics which we presented on the 15th of May nationally are not promising. They're discouraging. In Alaska, these are outlier events. The FBI has identified, based on reports, that they occur. But we think in the instance that happened, for example, in 2019, that this is a tool in the toolbox, both for the prosecutor and the court system, as a reflection of a public upset over this kind of conduct and singling out a member of the community based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. So that's what brings us here.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Oh, for the record, I would like to state that Vice Chair Kopp joined us at 1:04 p.m. Are there any questions for the sponsor? Representative Costello.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, my question has to do with how aggravating factors are addressed in our criminal system. Can you actually layer them, or do we have to choose one when we're pursuing an aggravating factor?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, the prosecutor can choose all that he or she thinks merit consideration by the jury. And there are 37 on the state side penalty enhancements. There are also lots of mitigators. And so, for example, if you look at the bill, because of the way the drafting manual works, they reprint the whole bill in this instance. For example, number 6 says that the defendant's conduct created a risk of imminent physical injury to 3 or more persons other than accomplices. So, you know, if you're going to injure 3 or more people, you could get in more trouble than if you're going to injure 1 or 2. So this is in that group. It's just that it is adding these 4 words to subsection 22, where the defendant knowingly directed the conduct constituting the offense at a victim because of their character, or their race, sex. Character is not the right word, but a characteristic. So that's what this does.
I'm going to follow up for Representative Costello, because the way I interpret her question would be, could you get an aggravating factor because of the person's race, and then an additional aggravating factor because of their sexual orientation, and an additional aggravating factor because of their religion? Like, could you get multiples of this or statement?
To the chair, I think that you could, but it'd be a very strange fact pattern. Right. So you'd have to show that discreetly that each of these things applied. As I noted to the body on May 15th of last year, there was a case called Wisconsin versus Mitchell, where a former Chief Justice Rehnquist said these are not unconstitutional. So any consideration of that, I think, is dispelled by that case. In that case, 3 African-Americans had attacked a white person. And the evidence supported that they did so because he was white.
Are there any other questions for the sponsor? Seeing no other questions, I will now like to open public testimony on House Bill 24. Public testimony on House Bill 24 is now open. If there's anyone in the room who would like to testify, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony. Seeing no one in the room, we'll move online. Neither anyone online or in the room to testify. Public testimony on House Bill 24 is now closed. At the last hearing of House Bill 24, I set an amendment deadline of May 20th, 2025. Having received no proposed amendments, I would now like to offer time for final comments on this bill.
I'll wait them. I won't wait them. This bill is stuck by me because it was so obvious that Ms. Willis's assailant had come after her. You have to understand, a rock was thrown through her window in one instance, shattering the windshield. The rock said Dyke on it. The assailant then later, different day, follows her to her garage door in the dark. There he pushes her and stabs her. The knife falls to the ground. There's nothing in our law, and most people could not be targeted in that way because most people don't have that orientation. And there's nothing in the law that reflects public disgrace with that kind of conduct. So I think that this, again, is a tool, fortunately, we don't need often. It's used by 31 states. 31 states have this.
Any comments from the committee? I will make a comment. I appreciate the sponsor for bringing this bill forward. I understand the need for the addition of this language. And I'll just use it as an example. I have an intern in my office, Carly Thrun, and she, on our first staff meeting, volunteered to help with my social media. And I told her that was fine, but I had to warn her of just what she would see by managing the social media. And it's not about me. It's about people like me. I mean, I'm a public figure. So, of course, you know, this comes with the territory. But just I think that there's hate for this group. And I think if someone kills somebody or assaults somebody for this one and only reason, that the aggravating factor is appropriate. And I'm grateful that you brought the bill forward.
Sure. I appreciate that our laws recognize that if you're part of an identifiable group and you're targeted for that, we are making strides in saying that people who are whatever group that is, as long as it's identifiable, if you are attacked for that reason, that for a long time in our country, we've taken a very dim view of that. And I also look to the local governments who address this issue immediately at this time. You mentioned the city of Soldotna and the borough assembly. And, I intend to support moving this bill. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Vice Chair.
Any other final comments?
Mr. Chair, at this time, I move that House Bill 24, Work Order 34-LS0250/N be reported out of the Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 24, Work Order 34-LS0250/N is reported out of the Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We will now take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Back on the record, our second item of business is to bring House Bill 20, Prohibit Fees for Paper Documents, up for its first hearing in our committee. At this time, I would like to invite the sponsor, Rep. Sadler, and his intern, Kai Elkins, to the witness table to introduce the bill. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, this is Dan Sadler, representative for House District 24, Chugach, Eagle River, Birchwood, and Peters Creek. I want to thank you for having this bill up. I'm going to give you a brief statement in support of the bill and then pass it off to my intern, Kai, to do the sectional. I had to smile. We're sitting here watching the bill. We're talking about a bill to prohibit fees for paper documents. I think everyone here has paper copies of their bills. So it's a receptive audience already. I'm glad to see that. Mr. Chairman, briefly, HB 20 would prevent businesses from charging a fee to customers who prefer to get their invoices or their statements or other documents in the traditional way, on paper, through the mail. Certainly, more and more cell phone carriers, utilities, banks, and other businesses are either charging customers a monthly fee if they want to get paper or offering a discount to go paperless as an incentive. Thing is, not every Alaskan wants to do business online, and frankly, not every Alaskan can do business online. More than 100,000 Alaskans are 65 years or older, I have been recently one of them, and people who are more comfortable doing business on paper and who are likely to stay that way, internet convenience or not. And because people who are older are more likely to be on fixed incomes, they're less likely to be able to afford the fees charged for extra for getting paper documents. Also, about 60,000 Alaskans have no internet access. Despite our investments in BEAD and libraries and so forth, a lot of Alaskans live off the grid. And even those, an extra 200,000 probably, do have internet access, it's not really reliable, and it's slow and below federal minimums. And it, as we see, unreliability is not limited to the bush. Last year in this building, we had an outage when the undersea cable broke, and we had no internet, and we almost ground to a halt here. So to wrap up and keep the things moving, House Bill 20 would bar businesses from charging different rates for customers in Alaska based on whether they go paperless or like paper documents. I'm pleased to say this bill does not cost the state anything and really imposes no additional cost over the status quo to businesses, but it does recognize the unique challenges that we have in Alaska with limited internet access and an aging population. Mr. Chair, thanks again for hearing the bill. Appreciate your consideration. We'll be glad to answer any questions from the committee. But right now, Mr. Elkins will present this actual, if you may.
Thank you, Chair Gray and members of this committee. For the record, this is Kai Elkins, staff to Representative Sadler. And this is sectional analysis for House Bill 20, Version N. Section 1 amends AS 2136 by adding a new section, AS 2136-525, which prohibits insurers from charging an additional fee or different rate for individuals who prefer to receive paper copies of invoices, statements, and other documents. This section does not, however, prevent an insurer from charging a fee for providing duplicate copies of any documents previously provided. Section 2 amends AS 4545 by adding a new section, AS 4545-940, which prohibits businesses from charging an additional fee or a different rate for individuals who prefer to receive paper copies of invoices, statements, and other documents. This section does not, however, prevent a business from charging a fee for providing duplicate copies of any documents previously provided. Section 2 defines business by the meaning given in AS 437110, which states a business is, quote, a for-profit or non-profit entity engaging or offering to engage in a trade, a service, a profession, or an activity with the goal of receiving a financial benefit in exchange for the provision of services or goods or other property, close quote. Section 3 adds to the list of unlawful business acts and practices in Title 45 to include violations of AS 4545-940 established in Section 2 of this bill. And this is sectional analysis for House Bill 20, Version N.
Thank you, Mr. Elkins. Questions from the committee? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray, through the chair to Representative Sadler. Do you have any idea for other states that might have this policy of how much that has impacted other fees or premiums related to a business by prohibiting these paper fees?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, I'm going to have my intern answer the question. He's well prepared to answer this kind of questions. Thank you for asking.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Mina. From my understanding, New York also has a law on banning paper fees for statements, and they have not run into any of the issues that you have described in your question.
Thank you.
I'll ask some questions. So my first question is, I think many of us are familiar with businesses offering us a discount if we opt out of our paper bills. And it's, I just want to be clear, would your bill ban offering a discount to customers who choose to go paperless?
Actually, yes, it does. It would, well, they can charge what they want. Businesses can charge what they want to provide an invoice digitally. What the bill simply addresses is an additional, you know, to be fair, a higher or even a lower cost for paper. So, no, they can charge, you know, what they want to for the, does not set a cap on what they can charge for their fees. It just says it cannot be differential. It cannot be different.
Mm-hmm. My follow-up to that is, when you said earlier that there's no additional cost to the business for providing paper documents, but they're buying the paper, they're printing it, they're using toner, they're using postage to send it to people. So I would argue that there actually is a cost to sending out paper bills, and that if folks opt toward the paperless option, that that is a cost savings to the business. And I don't know, how would you respond to that?
Well, a fair question that comes up. Well, you have to, it kind of depends on what you assume as your status quo. You know, for a long time, businesses have done business on paper through the U.S. mail. And to my mind, and I think many Alaskans, that is a status quo, and changes from that are what need to be addressed. Now, what I would say to that is if businesses are saving money by using the digital communication bills, if they're offering a discount to the customers who do that, that'd be great. But I don't think they are, and I don't think that there's benefit provided directly to the consumer for that. What I'm seeing is to change the status quo to this is the cost of doing business, you pay your bill, you're going to do that, to paying an extra cost for delivery of that does not seem fair. You know, businesses still print out paper, they have memos and so forth. We do not proportionally apportion those costs of doing business on paper to the client, so I don't think it's fair to assume that delivering the bill for services by paper should be an additional cost. Remember, these are customers who are already paying a cost for service. There are certain expenses that should maybe just be part of the cost of doing business.
I think I'm going to make up some hypothetical numbers, but say, for example, 90% of your customers were opting to go paperless, and 10% of your customer base decided to stick with paper, and you're not allowed to offer any sort of discount to the paperless folks. Well, if you raise the fee, you know, if you're going to make sure that you charge enough to pay for the paper, the toner, mm-hmm. and the postage, then ultimately the 90% paperless folks would be subsidizing the 10% paper side. So, I mean, I'm playing the devil's advocate, sure. Representative Sadler. I just that there actually is, I think, a lower cost to being paperless, and I think not being allowed to offer a discount to incentivize that seems, dare I say, right. Government overreach.
The words have never passed my lips, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to the chair. The scenario you described, I would say, gee whiz, the 10%. Who are paying the cost are subsidizing those who are getting their bills electronically. Fair is fair, I think. Certainly, if there's 90% who are getting their statements electronically, there's sufficient savings involved in that to certainly overcome that very small 10%. So the practical impact. And a point which I did not make, and I don't put first and foremost in my advocate, is that I think this is a bit of a rear action. This is not going to persist into the future for forever. I think those of the generations who prefer paper will move on to other things in time, and their desire for paper documents will fade away. But I think this just kind of protects them against additional costs and so forth. And I guess you might think it's a insignificant cost, but if someone's got a couple different utilities, telephone, gas, electric, they have a bank, credit union, they have Netflix, that's two, three, four, five charges. They can be from $5 to more, up to really high levels. It adds up, and you pay it every month. And if you're on a fixed income, every little bit hurts.
I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'll ask one more question, and that is in places like our districts, mm-hmm. where we have adequate internet and it's reasonable for us to receive our documents online. When I was offered a discount maybe 10 years ago, mm-hmm. The discount actually was the reason why I chose it. I was like, oh, I'll get however much off, I'll click it. And that is why I ended up going paperless the first time, was because of the discount. I think most folks hate change. And so I think if you remove that incentive, there are folks who probably don't really care about getting those papers in the mail that continue to get the papers in the mail, which, beyond just the cost of the business is just a lot of unnecessary paper. So I worry about that. And I wonder if there's room for an amendment that it only applied to places where getting online bills is just not feasible or is just not reliable.
Well, in response to that, boy, I don't think there's a formal metric for what is reliable or unreliable internet service. Certainly the providers will all say, we're 100%, we're Alaska, that'd be a little bit of a challenge. Sure, I understand where you're going with that. I think, again, it gets back to what you consider as a status quo, what is the variance from that. Yes, indeed, we're going through a paradigm shift where more people are availing themselves of the internet services, but there are those who cannot or prefer not to do that, and they should not be, I don't think they should be dinged extra costs for doing that.
Thank you. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Gray. I guess to the chair or through the chair, just a comment. I know that with my district, House District 19, that we have some digital equity issues. Not everybody has access to broadband. There's also issues with digital literacy classes as well. And I know that, you know, we recently had Alaska Literacy Program come to the Capitol this week. They're in the heart of the district, and not everyone has access to paying their bills online. So I think it's a good step towards making sure that that option is available for folks.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from committee? Oh. At ease. We have public testimony happening now. We will now open public testimony for House Bill 20. House Bill 20 public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? And please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony. Is there anyone online that would like to testify? Seeing no one online or in the room, public testimony is now closed. I should go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I do have a point off record. I did hear the question. You know, the Sable Access really does a lot of business with constituents and so forth. Does this apply to state and government agencies? No. As Kai said, this is businesses with the engage in service for money, so this would not affect state communication with citizens.
Thank you for that clarification. I also should have offered that Director Heather Carpenter from Department of Administration?
Commerce.
Insurance. Yes, the director of the Department of Insurance is online and available for questions. If anyone has any questions. I would now like to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 20 for Tuesday, February 3rd, 2026 at 5 p.m. Please work with my committee aide, Dylan Hitchcock-Lopez, to ensure that amendments are submitted on time.
You did.
We will now set House Bill 20 aside and bring it back up at a later date. That concludes. Oh, thank you to Representative Sadler and to Kai Elkins for your presentation today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That concludes our business for the committee. But before we adjourn, I need to mention something about Friday. On Friday, we'll be returning to House Bill 47, Generated Obscene Child Sex Abuse Material, which was introduced by sponsor Representative Dance on Monday. As a reminder, the amendment deadline was set for House Bill 47 for tomorrow at 5 p.m. However, Department of Law has shared some proposed revisions to the bill. They are now drafting a CS to incorporate their suggested revisions, which my committee aide will circulate as soon as we have it. The reason I bring that up is that if you are considering an amendment, we need to make sure that it's for the upcoming CS, because I would love to move the bill out on Friday, and I don't want to have any delays. So please work with my aide, Dylan Hitchcock-Lopez, if you were thinking of any amendments to House Bill 47. I would also like to remind everyone that Friday's bill hearing for House Bill 213, Data Sharing Social Security, has been canceled. It will be rescheduled for a later date. The time is now 1:33 p.m., and this hearing of the House Judiciary Committee is adjourned.